This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. On today's show, we'll hear about efforts to reduce the rate of childhood poverty in Cincinnati. In the U.S. Census Bureau's 2012 American Community Survey, Cincinnati ranked the second highest in the country, with about 53% of children living in poverty. While that percentage has gone down in recent years, the rate of child poverty in Cincinnati is still more than 44%, which is double the rate of the state and nation. Joining me first as we look at the child poverty situation in Greater Cincinnati are Executive Director of the Child Poverty Collaborative, Lynn Marmer, Director of Community Affairs for Mayor John Cranley's office, Bridget Patton, and WCPO.com WCPO Insider Reporter Lucy May, who has written extensively on poverty and the WCPO digital series Below the Line, Examining Childhood Poverty. You can join us 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Bridget, Lucy, and Lynn, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Lynn, the Collaborative is the new organization for dealing with childhood poverty. Tell me how it got its start.
It got started for a number of reasons or in a number of ways. The truth is that child poverty has been growing both in our city and also in our region. And so there were a number of things that kind of coalesced at the same time. One was the report that came from the Urban League called The State of Black Cincinnati. And it truly is a very strongly painted picture of the disparities in our community. So there was more information, if you will. Mayor Cranley, in the State of the City address, said this is a serious problem and it's an unacceptable problem. And so he set a very bold goal, which is to move 5,000 families and 10,000 children out of poverty in 5 years. The United Way has been focused on this issue. Of course, this is basically fundamental to the work of the United Way. And the business community also has said that this is something that we cannot as a community tolerate. We cannot have this be the same year after year after year. So the Child Poverty Collaborative, and the word collaborative is really important in this because it's a lot of different people in the community. It's a lot of voices. It's people who have personally experienced poverty, who live in neighborhoods that are impacted by poverty. It's people who are social service workers, business leaders, faith-based leaders. It's people in government. And so it's really a collaborative of the community.
Lynn, with all the organizations that are already dealing with issues of childhood poverty, why the need for the collaborative?
Well, I think the need comes from the fact that you've got an awful lot of good people doing very good work, but we're not moving the needle. In fact, things are going in the wrong direction. And I think most of us realize that if we keep doing the same thing, we are going to keep getting the same result. So we felt, I think, and the community felt like we needed to come together and do some things differently. Now, we don't have all the answers. Obviously, if we knew what the answers were, we'd be doing them and we wouldn't be on your show today. but it's a learning process, and we're engaging the community in a learning process to figure out, A, what does poverty look like in Cincinnati? Why is it, in fact, so high, so disproportionately high? And then also, what are some of the things that we can do differently in order to change the trajectory for children and families?
Bridget, what neighborhoods and communities in Cincinnati are most affected by poverty and childhood poverty?
I think that it would be safe to say that the classic neighborhoods in the corridor, which are primarily African American communities, coming out of downtown and heading up the Reading Road corridor. So that would be Avondale, Bond Hill, Roselawn. I think certainly Price Hill. As we go to the west, and then the Fairmounts, North and South Fairmount, the English Woods area. And the area of Westwood, that is, I guess that would be East Westwood. East Westwood. And then Walnut Hills and Evanston, certainly, would be neighborhoods that are affected by poverty in terms of the numbers that we see.
And so it sounds like it's pretty widespread in Cincinnati.
Exactly.
Lucy, you've been doing the Below the Line series. WCPO started that back in January 2015, I think.
Yes.
And what have been some of your observations about poverty in Cincinnati since you've been doing this series?
Well, as Lynn mentioned, it's not just a City of Cincinnati problem, although there's certainly a very high concentration of childhood poverty. I think the most recent five-year census estimates were more than 47% of all children in the City of Cincinnati live at or below the poverty line, and that rate is even higher among African-American children. But it's a problem that's spread throughout the tri-state. One in five kids throughout the tri-state lives at or below the poverty line, and it goes all the way from, you know, the southern parts of northern Kentucky to the northern suburbs of the northern counties that are, you know, in other ways pretty affluent. So there are pockets of poverty. We've done some mapping of the census data that shows it's, you know, I think people think of it as an urban core problem, mm-hmm. and it's just not. It's throughout the tri-state. It's become very widespread. I can't say that it's in every neighborhood. For example, I don't know that Indian Hill has a pocket of childhood poverty, but in almost every neighborhood in the tri-state, there are neighbors who don't know where their kids' next meals are coming from, that are having a hard time paying the bills, that are worried about being evicted. It's become a very widespread problem.
Lynn, I know you were saying it's difficult to pinpoint the causes. Do we have any idea of what factors are leading our area to have such a high childhood poverty rate?
Well, we're approaching this in two ways. One way is to do some research and get some data, because frankly, there are some of us who are convinced by data, and data is really important. So we've hired the RAND Corporation to help us. And one of the core questions to them is, what is the profile and why is Cincinnati such an outlier? We have some ideas, but frankly, they're the same ideas that you have all across the country, which is people did not the recovery from the recession was not even. It did not, in fact, reach into people who are at minimum wage jobs. And their ability to move up is very tied to their ability to move out of poverty. You cannot support a family on a minimum wage job. You cannot afford to support a family on two minimum wage jobs. Frankly, difficult. So, yes, it's wages. Yes, of course, it's education and opportunity. It's also what neighborhood you live in, because you can see some pretty dramatic differences in Cincinnati in terms of health and employment and education, depending on which neighborhood you live in. And that's pretty appalling. I mean, you know, where you can go in life in America is supposed to be unlimited. And yet, it's really oftentimes defined by your zip code. So we don't know all the reasons why Cincinnati is different, but we certainly know that the reasons why Cincinnati is different are the same as you see across the country, too.
Mm-hmm. Lucy, any thoughts on why it's so stubborn, why it's such a stubborn problem in this area? In your reporting, have you come across anything that might give some clues?
I think, I agree with everything Lynn just said. I think the fact that our entry-level manufacturing jobs have disappeared so much over the last 15 or 20 years. There still are manufacturing jobs, and the ones that are growing are typically advanced manufacturing jobs. And the education level you need to do that is very different from the education level you needed to work in the machine shops that employed people and allowed people to make really great livings 30 or 40 years ago, where you could have a machine tool job and you could be the sole breadwinner in your house and raise a big family and everybody, you know, could eat all the regular meals, and you could clothe your kids and even send them to private schools. I mean, it was those jobs just aren't around anymore. And in addition to the recovery being uneven, I think now people who had maybe higher paying jobs are now competing more with people who had lower paying jobs. A lot of the families in poverty that I talk to are cobbling together several different full-time jobs. Several different part-time jobs. That means they don't get the benefits associated with full-time employment. They don't get paid time off. They can't, if their kid gets sick, that means they have to miss a day of work. Sometimes just that over a day or two can jeopardize their employment status completely. And so a lot of people are trying to patch things together and make it work. And the structure of the economy has changed. I mean, a lot more employers are piecing together these part-time jobs so they don't have to pay the benefits and to be competitive in their own industries. And that's affecting families. And I think also our transportation system has a lot to do with it. It's funny you mentioned the Urban League's report. And when I did a story about that, I got a call from a gentleman in Northern Kentucky, a very nice and reasonable man, who said, I don't understand why, you know, you wrote about how unemployment is so high in some of these predominantly African-American neighborhoods. And I don't understand why don't they just come to Northern Kentucky? We've got all these jobs in Hebron that we can't fill at Amazon and all these places are hiring. And I said, well, sir, you have to understand those entry-level jobs are typically second or third shift. And if you don't have a reliable car, how are you going to get from Madisonville to Hebron at midnight to start your shift and get home at 8 o'clock in the morning? There's just not a public transportation system that is effective for people who are in these neighborhoods to connect them to where the jobs are that might be available to them with their education level. So I think that's a complicated piece of the puzzle, mm-hmm. too.
And to just add to that, you know, you've got child care issues, mm-hmm. you've got just family structures that further complicate things. You've got single head of household who, without someone there to support a midnight shift, not to mention the transportation being an issue. And then, you know, just some, I think, generational poverty issues that when you talk about stubborn, I mean, talk about stubborn. You, every generation wants something better for the next generation, yet we can't seem to quite make that happen. And so, you know, what that says is that people really want to, provide for their children and so that their children have a better future. But still, you know, with that desire, it's still a major challenge. The other issue, too, I think that at times it's significant and it rises, and then sometimes it's kind of in the background. That is the issue of reentry and barriers. And for those who have backgrounds that they've served their time and they're mm-hmm. out and they participate in, you know, programs to get them back on their feet, but yet still opportunities to work don't necessarily exist. And so I think that that is another issue that particularly when you look at the African-American communities in terms of their unemployment rates being significantly higher.
Yeah, I think the statistic that I hear all the time is that 2,000 people per year come to Hamilton County after leaving prison. So that's two, and that's new every year. So that's 2,000 more people coming into our county. And if there aren't job opportunities for those people, most of whom are men, some are younger men, some are a little bit older, if they can't, if there aren't good job opportunities, how are they supposed to contribute and help support their families? And they may not be married to the mother of their children, but it kind of, it makes it much more difficult for them to be the contributors that they want to be. And I've interviewed a lot of mm-hmm. men who find themselves, and there are programs working at that. I mean, there are companies like Nehemiah Manufacturing in the West End. Mm-hmm. Its whole mission is driven around second chance employment. There's an initiative spearheaded by a group through the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber called Untapped Cincinnati that's trying to convince more and more manufacturers to open their hiring processes. And, you know, there's that whole ban the box. There are a lot of job applications where you have to check a box to say if you have a criminal record. And the feeling is that once you've checked that box, your application goes in the recycling bin. The interview's kind of ended. I agree with Bridget. I think that's a huge issue.
We will continue our discussion about childhood poverty in Cincinnati. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Joining me this afternoon, Executive Director of the Child Poverty Collaborative, Lynn Marmer, Director of Community Affairs for Mayor John Cranley's office, Bridget Patton, and WCPO.com, WCPO Insider Reporter, Lucy May. You can be part of the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. We've been talking about possible causes of poverty, childhood poverty. I'm wondering how much the heroin epidemic in our region is contributing to this.
So, you know, we've done some work as a result of the Child Poverty Collaborative on two fronts. One is, of course, the research front with the RAND Corporation, but we've also been holding community conversations. And our goal is to have 100 of those. We're pretty close, as a matter of fact. And these are conversations that are held in churches, in neighborhoods. And frankly, we're talking to people who sometimes nobody ever talks to and who really don't have a sense that their voice is valued or important. And one of the things that they have talked about is some of the things that we need and deeper and greater care for both substance abuse, addiction, and then also mental health issues have come up as things that people in neighborhoods are saying we need more of, that this is really a lack of a support network that people can access and can take people from where they are. So there's no doubt that addiction, drug abuse, and heroin is certainly the most dramatic part of that, is a contributing factor here.
Yeah, and I think the thing that's interesting about the impact of heroin is that I think that's typically impacting different neighborhoods than some of the neighborhoods we've been talking about, because heroin is disproportionately a white addiction, and we've been talking about majority African-American neighborhoods. So there are mental health issues and substance abuse issues that impact greatly the neighborhoods that are mostly African-American populated. But this heroin epidemic, I mean, I've written a number of stories talking to people in northern Kentucky in less diverse areas. And I did a story last year. There were literally thousands of children who were homeless under the definition, the Federal Education Department definition that's used for homelessness. And much of that was because of heroin. They were either living with grandparents. They were bouncing around to other relatives because either mom or dad had overdosed. They were one or both was in prison because of heroin-related issues or in recovery. And it's impacting – that alone is just impacting thousands of kids across the tri-state.
Mm-hmm. When you have addicted parents and now you have children who – now have to be cared for by grandparents. If you think about folks on fixed incomes, you can begin to paint a picture of how things can quickly go from, you know, normalcy to kind of poverty or, you know, some real challenges to your income as a result of what children need. Mm-hmm. So I think that when we think about addiction and mental health and parents not being able to actively care for their children, you know, that takes us in another direction with poverty, but certainly it impacts poverty as well.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. And Chris in Delhi joins us now. Hi, Chris.
Hi, yes. Amazon has a bus that leaves Government Square, I think, for every shift. So if you can get a bus to Government Square, you can hold a job at Amazon.
So some of the specific employers are supplying transportation then.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's also, you know, come about as a result, frankly, of Amazon wanting to have more employees from a broader base. So that is true. Thanks for reminding us of that.
And I think a lot of the problems companies are having filling positions is because everyone who can pass a drug test is employed now. You know, I mean, it's the people who can't pass drug tests who are unemployed.
Yeah, I know. I have talked to families who have I understand what you're saying about the drug tests, and I think the whole easing into legalization of marijuana is going to make that trickier for a lot of people. But I do think that transportation is still an issue. I don't know enough about the metro routes to know how easy it is to get from Madisonville at midnight or 1 a.m. to Government Square to pick up the Amazon bus. I mean, maybe that's easier than I think it is, but based on the people I'm talking to, that's tricky. And then I know I've talked to people who have had part-time jobs at Amazon and even have transportation, but if they don't get enough hours, then they almost spend as much money on gas getting to Amazon as they take home after taxes and their paychecks. So I think there are just some structural issues in all this, too.
We had an email from someone mentoring an 18-year-old out of foster care, and she said her rent's going to jump from, is that right, $25 a month to, 30% of her salary if she happens to start working. How big a problem is that, where you have programs that discourage people from working because they're going to lose their benefits?
That's exactly right. That is one of the issues that absolutely impacts people's ability to move up in the workplace, is if you have an income of a certain level, then you're receiving what are called non-cash benefits, which would be rent, child care, some of those kinds of things, health care. And if you tip over a line, and it's not a very rich line, it's a very narrow line, then all of a sudden you lose all of those benefits. So it's a structural problem. Some people call it the cliff effect, which is basically you get yourself right to the place where you have a job, but then you lose all these benefits in it, and it's not something you can recover from.
Yeah. I interviewed a mom last year who spent 7 years working her way off of all kinds of government assistance. And I think that shows you how difficult that can be. And she was, at the time I talked to her, I can't remember what her hourly salary was, maybe $12 an hour, which was the most she'd ever made in her life. And she had, I think, 4 kids. And that was her sole income, and it was a struggle. I mean, that even working full time, $12 an hour, which is well beyond minimum wage, she was having a hard time. I interviewed her around Christmas time, and she wasn't sure what kind of Christmas she could give her kids, which broke her heart because she felt like she had really accomplished something by being off of any kind of, you know, what people refer to as welfare. She had taken 7 years to get there, and then she wasn't sure she could make Christmas for her kids because she had to explain to them, I'll get you gifts as soon as I can, but I just might not have the money to do it, which is, you know, that might not sound like a big deal, but if you're a parent, you know how important it is when you're feeling that success. You want to be able to share that with your kids, and it can be tough for people.
So, Lynn, you have another community engagement session coming up this weekend, is it?
Thank you. We do. And it's a community summit. It will be held at Xavier University on Saturday. Breakfast and lunch will be provided. So is child care. And it is right, Xavier's right on a bus line. So it is, you can come right down from Montgomery Road. It begins at 9. And it is really a community conversation. We're really looking forward to it. Curtis Fuller will be there as our MC. And we're going to have some interactive and really interesting opportunities to engage with each other, learn from each other, listen to each other, have folks share their ideas and wisdom. It'll be from 9 to noon on Saturday at Xavier.
Okay. Is there a website people can get information and register at?
There is. There's even a phone number, which is 513-762-7245, or you can go to childpovertycollaborative.org. So it's not the Child Poverty Collaborative, it's childpovertycollaborative.org.
Okay, and there's a link to that on our website, wvxu.org. And Bridget and Lynn, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Executive Director of the Child Poverty Collaborative, Lynn Marmer, and Director of Community Affairs for Mayor John Cranley's office, Bridget Patton. Lucy May joins us in the next segment as we take a look at some of the specific programs that are dealing with childhood poverty in Cincinnati. And coming up in Focus on Technology, there's a new app that you can use to help the homeless. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.